Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Three Sides to Every Adoption. I'm Sarah Easterly, an adoptee, and I'm joined, as usual, by Kelsey Vandervliet-Ranyard, a birth parent. Hi, Kelsey. And
Hi.
Mary Holden, an adoptive parent. Welcome back. Welcome
Hi,
back.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Kelsey.
Hi.
Okay, so today, what we thought we would do is talk about adoption terminology. Words do matter, and there's lots of different terms in adoption land that get used. Some can have some effects that we don't want them to have, and some are just important for honoring and different reasons of nuance that we do get it clear. And so we thought we'd just bounce around. We're just going to go from phrase to phrase today and just bouncing around and see, just what comes when the three of us start talking about how we each react from our perspectives in the adoption constellation to these terms and some of the debate we're aware of on these terms when it arises. So I think since I'm going first here, I'll start with adoptees and some of the things that the terms we're almost always called adoptees. There's not really any discrepancy that I've heard of there. Adoptees are adoptees. What I do hear of though is that labels, we can be labeled preceding the adoptee name, and that often we can be called angry adoptees or ungrateful adoptees. And not helpful. we can be angry, just like every human. We have those feelings. What is unfortunate is sometimes we're labeled as angry or ungrateful when we're speaking out and talking about the nuances of adoption. And so that feels really unfair. And that's when we get we get truly angry at those labels, because it's not fair to, in my opinion, to label us in any way angry, ungrateful, or otherwise, just because we're speaking about the complexities of adoption that are just a part of adoption.
I think when I hear adoptees speaking out, it's typically around adoption practices. Not necessarily that they're hammering on their parents, although that sometimes happens too. The sense that I get from the people calling them angry is that it's because, how dare you criticize something that was so good to me? You must be really angry. You must be, what about your parents? What would your parents think about you saying this?
So Lori, since you were just speaking, let's go to you next. Adoptive parents, tell us. Adoptive parents get some other names too.
Yeah, the word thrown around is called an adopter, which is probably one who adopts. And I think in England and on the other side of the pond, it's not used as an emotionally charged word, but sometimes it is used as an emotionally charged word as a somebody who is not nicely adopting. I don't know exactly how to say it, but, oh, you are an adopter. And then the next step up from that would be an adopto-raptor. I don't know if you've heard that. And I asked what it was once, and somebody said it's somebody who accumulates a lot of children by adoption. So I think it has a number associated with it. Like, it just means like you're building a big family. And sometimes it's celebrities who are most often accused of being an adopto-raptor. Is your understanding of that any different than mine?
Or like just the predatory yeah. nature.
Sometimes I've heard like people refer to them as like child collectors, like the people that adopt like a lot of kids and like more than they can handle. So
I want to go back to something else that you were saying, Sarah, about adoptees. I was recently working with Angela Tucker on a project, and she said she doesn't like to call them the children, your adopted child. She likes to call them the adoptee because of the idea that adoptees are eternally infantilized. We see them as children even when they're adults. And we have to even clarify adult adoptee when we say an adoptee, because we see adoptees as the child. And so I'm starting to try to switch my own language to say more adoptee more often.
So that's a really good point. Yeah, thank you, Angela, for that. Yeah, that's important. And that does happen. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
It does bring a challenge for adoptive parents because if, you know, it's easy to say your child, but if I say your adoptee, then it starts to sound also like there's ownership there. And that with the word your, I don't actually mean ownership. I mean, claiming, like it is the child who lives in your home, who is your child and your adoptee, but I can see how that might chafe people too. It's really hard to come up with the right words.
Yeah, that's a good point. Your adoptee versus the adoptee, which can sound impersonal. And this is the complexities of all of this being highlighted.
We do want the claiming, to claim and be claimed is something that an adoptee needs, but we don't want the ownership, like you're mine and nobody else's.
The birth parents ones. We hear like, obviously, birth mom, birth father, dad. And then we hear like first mom. I've heard that some people don't like first mom just because they interpret it as like sounding like competition. But Lori, I think you wrote this on a blog that it first is intended to mean chronologically first, not like competition first, not like a winner or anything. Trust me, we're not winners. but I also hear stuff like natural mother. And then I see, because this positive adoption language has really taken hold in the past, maybe decade or so, people like to talk about positive adoption language, keep it positive, and then they'll show like two columns, one's positive, one's negative. And they'll use natural mother as a negative. I don't necessarily interpret it as being like binary perspective on those things. I think like your natural mother, I think it signals biological. Some people don't like that. It is what it is. And then of course, with people, especially that don't know much about adoption, they're like, oh, you're the real mom, which that's not a fan favorite. And it's not accurate either. And I'm trying to think of some other ones. I think, of course, like I have seen birth moms being referred to as incubators. Super nice to hear. But then I have also, but that's very rare. And then I've heard birth moms a lot of times on these like Facebook groups, we'll be like, we don't know what to call our child's birth mom. Any ideas, any suggestions? And people will be like, oh yeah, we call ours tummy mommy. And I'm like, what? Who's voluntarily being named tummy mommy? I was like, okay, I don't think people realize that might not be, I wouldn't call that positive adoption language, but okay. I don't know. I think that like for me personally, I just prefer birth mom. I don't care enough to distinguish between first mom, birth mom, biological mom. To me, like it's not important. I think it is important to a lot of people. But yeah.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you how tummy mommy strikes you as an adoptee.
Yeah, tummy mommy, I'm cringing inside. It feels really gross. Sorry. And I recognize I'm an adult. I know that, a lot of times we like to cutify things for children. That goes for me hand in hand with gotcha day that, I think the problem with words like these, so you've got to think about the lifetime of your adoptee and how these things that might seem cute and age appropriate for little children, like that's going to stick with their vernacular and their story for a lifetime. Unfortunately, the way adoption works is we get our stories first through others, how they tell it to us. And that gets embedded in our psyches in a really damaging way when we grow up. So I think it's, you know, I'm not even just reacting to the cutesiness. I'm reacting to the problems that are going to come down the road when a 25-year-old is like all of a sudden really confused about like, wait a minute, like, gotcha day, tell me, mommy, like, that's like, you know, like when you start looking, these are like, there's nothing cute about adoption. And I think this is what we often we're hiding behind with these cute things is adoption. It's not cute. I'm sorry, but it's just not cute. It's painful. It starts with pain. It starts with loss. It starts with hardship. It starts with situations that nobody really wanted to be in, for the most part. I mean, not always. I know on the adoptive parent side, there could be infertility. There could be loss already. There could be, for the birth parent, a lot of loss and unexpected situations, and no good outcome, no perfect outcome there. So let's not cutify it and try to turn it into this like happy, cute, tummy mummy, gotcha day thing. That's a little rant from me.
What does gotcha day do to, what does that feel like to you? I think for adoptive parents, it's kind of about claiming, okay, you're ours now. And sometimes it comes out of the foster care system as well as domestic infant adoption, but it's a way of claiming. I think that's on the good side, but there's always an other side in adoption that part of what this series is about, helping people see the other side that they're not seeing. So what is the other side of gotcha day?
Well, I will say that the way it lands does kind of feed into what you were saying, Lori, about the adopter raptors. You know, it feels predatory. Gotcha. You know, it's not, it feels like a predatory phrase. And so I think the better day, you know, the better way to phrase that is just, you know, the day that we became this family, and that you entered our family. I think there's just not, it doesn't need a phrase. It just needs some, I think we don't need to have a phrase for everything. You came into our family this way, and it becomes part of the adoptee story. But in there, I just want to kind of put a plug for like remembering that the adoptee story doesn't start with gotcha day. And I think that's the other part that's problematic of gotcha day is adoptees had a life before gotcha day, even if it was just purely in utero, 9 months bonding to birth mother, first mother. that's part of the adoptee's journey. And so these gotcha days kind of do kind of erase a distinct line of erasure, which for the adoptee, which is hard because it doesn't make space for that. So I think just making room for the whole picture. And that's not to say people who use gotcha day are always ignoring what preceded gotcha day, but I think it can easily happen that the focus gets put on gotcha day forward.
Kelsey, does gotcha day trigger birth parents in any way? Have you seen?
Yeah. I think it's very much puts us on the outside looking in, and it makes us feel like big giant losers, like it is a competition and we lost. That's kind of what it feels like. So, yeah, I don't really think there's much else to it. Like for me personally, my child's family doesn't do that, so I don't have that feeling, but I definitely secondhand can feel that way if I see it on social media, because that's where you always see it.
As I listen to you both, I'm starting to see that when we come at adoption from, and we've talked about this before, from this either or mindset, which permeates everything, that's when we get into the binary that you were talking about, Kelsey, like if one's a natural mom, then the other one's a non-natural mom. If one's the first mom, then one's the second mom. If one's, if one's the tummy mummy, then one's the, I don't know. I don't know what the alternative to that would be, but when we're in that either or, and it is a competition, like you say, we're thinking binary, and I think it probably serves everybody better if we can be more collaborative and not competitive with our titles and with the words that we use. And the way we think, that underlies everything. That underlies the language.
You know, the words drive how we think and then also reflect how we do both. So, yeah. I was thinking, Kelsey, if we could talk, it might be nice to switch gears a little bit and just talk about the nuances in given up for adoption, relinquished, put up for adoption. What are the nuances there from your perspective?
So I think the positive adoption language, they always say place for adoption. And I think that that's great if that's how your experience went. For me, myself, I say place. I intentionally made a plan. I was careful. I was cautious. I spent a lot of time and effort in picking a family, getting to know them. I was very intentional about the process. And that doesn't diminish the realities of my choices were very limited as well. To me, I did the best I could with what I had. And to me, that felt like a very intentional path. So I used place. I know so many women that didn't have that experience and that truly felt they had no other option, that they say they gave up or they put up, they surrendered, they relinquished. I don't think it's any of our right to tell women what their experience was like, because they're the only ones that truly know how that felt, and they are free to use any term that they feel is appropriate for their path. With adoptees, I think similarly, how they feel about how they were put into their adoptive family. That's their choice to use that terminology. And then for adoptive parents, I typically, especially like prospective adoptive parents, people that haven't adopted yet, people that have recently adopted, I do tell them to use place, because I don't know if they know any differently. I don't want them to use give up, because also, I guess I want them to be intentional in their adoption about, like, we're not gonna adopt a child from a mother who feels like she's just giving up. I guess I want them to be more alert about the practices that are happening in their own adoption. And so I say place to kind of put them on notice, I guess, about, you know, their role in advocating for this woman and this child. Of course, it doesn't always happen that way, but that's what we teach in agencies and law firms. We teach them to say place. But of course, if things happen differently, I say adjust the terminology as you see fit. I want adoption to be intentional. If that's what's going to happen, I want them to take the care and the caution and put the thought into it and do the work on both sides, on adoptive parent side and on expectant parent side. So I want them to be able to say, I placed with intention, but unfortunately that's just not always what we see happening. So, and I always encourage honesty. So if you're gonna talk about adoption, you should do it honestly, and especially with your child. So if they weren't intentionally placed, if they were given up, and if it was a situation like that, I think that they have every right to know that and to find acceptance with that, so that they can heal from that.
I really appreciate that, Kelsey. And I'm thinking just kind of a little bit from my own personal perspective around my evolution of understanding too is, I used to say because of my adoption wounds, and then I realized, no, it's more accurate to say because of my relinquishment wounds. And then because it's, you know, that it's more specific. And as I've engaged with my own and involved with my understanding and knowing that my adoption was took place. It was a situation of coercion. It was, you know, Baby Scoop and the era of a lot of, well, I don't want to say it like that's the only era of coercion, but it was an era with a lot of coercion, and mine was a situation of coercion. So relinquishment doesn't even feel right and honoring to my birth mom, because I wasn't relinquished. That's not what happened. So I now have evolved my wording to, from, it's gone from because of my adoption, because of my relinquishment, and now it's because of what I experienced as relinquishment, because that's more accurate in terms of what I feel I can speak to. It still is how I experienced it, whether that was the intent in the situation or not.
Kelsey, what do you think adoptive parents need to know about their own terminology in relation to the birth parent experience of the relationship, like, should I be saying surrendered or placed, or should I take cues from somebody else? And the last one I want to ask is about our birth mom.
So I think that I know we're saying that, you know, like terminology is complex, and I say take cues, but if you can't take cues, work with what you know. Placed is the accepted term right now. It could change in 5 years, because that's just the way life, the world, society works. We change our terminology every decade, and that's okay. I would say placed, but if something changes, if you find out new information, and if it's age appropriate, you know, that you have to consider those things as well, and the effect that it can have on a young kid. Take cues. Yeah, I think it is, as we know, it's so hard to give blanket advice, because it's such a highly individualistic experience, and it and you really have to take things case by case so many times. But yeah.
And I'm wondering, as a woman who has placed a baby, moves through her grief, does the grieving process, and I know that's an ongoing lifelong thing, but as she does it, I wonder if that word might look different along that journey. And some days it might feel like I gave up and I put up and I relinquished and I surrendered, and then at some point it might look like placed, or it might start out like placed, and then there might, you know, the next wave of processing comes in and it's like, no, I relinquished. So I think for adoptive parents, we would want to allow for her to have the space for all of those emotions, and changing the narrative as it works through her healing process. Do you think that's something to think about?
Yeah, 100%. I think that it's, the farther I get away from the experience, which is such a huge experience in my life that has changed the trajectory of my path forever, the farther I get from it, the harder it is to understand for myself too, because I'm in a way better spot now than I was then, like financially, mentally, emotionally, like just I'm miles ahead. And it's hard to remember what it was like before, because you kind of forget the pain, the confusion, the upset of everything, and so it does get hard to go through grief when you're like, I could have done it, I could have done this, I could have done that, and you forget all of the factors that were stacked against you. And so when you forget about all those things, you do go through these moments where you're like, no, I really did give up. And you think too of, you reframe a lot of experiences as well. Like, I think of things differently, conversations you had with people, or people that didn't offer you support that you thought they would, people that told you that you weren't going to be a good mom, or you weren't, you know what I mean? So like, you think of these different things later on and you reframe them in a different mindset, and the effects of grief process for sure, because you start to think that the person you are now is the same person back then with all the knowledge and experience that you have now. You didn't have all that then, so you can start taking yourself down these different paths. And if you're like me, like, I like to talk through things with people I love. And so, and I know I've talked through these things with my child's parents every once in a while too. And I'm sure it's hard to watch as an adoptive parent, your child's birth parent, go through these moments of confusion and about what that experience truly was and what happened and what, you know. And so, but yeah, I taking cues, but remembering that we're not always 100% sure either.
I think for adoptive parents, one really helpful thing for us to remember in our relationship with birth family, if they're around, and with our adoptee who's around, is to be flexible and movable as things change, because they, you know, parenting is all about change. The more fixed we are to words, stages, phases, ideas, the more, when we're rigid, we just really can't respond as well when the people around us are changing.
I really like that, Lori. One thing I want to come back to a little bit, because you touched on it, Kelsey, earlier, was the real mom and the problems there. And just from the adoptee's perspective, and Lori, I wrote a piece on, for your blog a while ago about You're Not My Real Mom. And I think we've talked about it on a podcast too. It's complex for adoptees, because we do think that in our minds a lot, and it is referring to our birth moms, but then we can also think it for our adoptive parents. And I know a lot of adoptees getting really upset either way when that question is posed to us. Have you ever thought about finding your real mom? And it can be really offensive, because it's like, I live with my real mom. And it can also, it's really complex for us. Both moms are real, to your point, Kelsey. And I just wanted to kind of validate that from adoptee's perspective. And so again, it's that competition you were talking about, Lori, that it kind of sets up this one's real, one's not real. And I think I have felt, and my mom had a lot of very upset feelings of jealousy when I would say, I mean, I used it as a threat too. I want to go find my real mom. Once I figured out that was a pain point from my mom, you know, it was like a power tool as a teenager, which I'm not proud of. I don't mean to smile about, but that's teenagers, right? I live with two of them now, and anything they can glob onto. So I think just recognizing that there's complexity there and not getting hooked by it, I think, like, would be my advice for adoptive parents, is not getting hooked by it. And then, you know, just being really careful on that wording. I mean, if adoptees say it, it's almost okay. I feel like it's okay for adoptees to say that themselves, but it's like one of those things that anybody but an adoptee is not allowed to say. And adoptees get to interchange the real mom all the time, which we do in our heads, and nobody else gets to use that word. I feel like that's adoptive parents or birth parents, because then you have the reaction that adoptive parents often have is, well, I'm your real mom, you know, and they get hooked there. And again, it's competition and it's not serving the adoptee. For us, both are real, and we're going to interchange them as we want to, as it fits.
That was such a powerful post that you wrote, and I'm going to put it in the show notes. I believe it went viral at the time too, because it was so illuminating for adoptive parents to see what might be behind "You're not my real mom" when it comes from an adoptee. So that was really helpful. Kelsey, I wanted to loop back to, what does it feel like, and what's the buzz about when an adoptive parent says, our birth mom came over yesterday, or our birth mom lives in Montana?
Honestly, at that point, I do give them the benefit of the doubt that they are just, they just don't know. Or they're just saying it very, like, they've always said it that way, so that's the way that they are going to keep saying it. Yeah, it bothers me a little bit. I I just don't get as bothered by terminology anymore. I think probably because I see way worse stuff going on. And so that kind of ranks lower on my priority list. But I do know birth moms that are like, I'm not. And you know, it also feels like, I don't like the possession. Anything that we say that's possessive, I just don't like that. Like, oh yeah, because I always try to say like, oh, my child's adoptive parents, they're not my adoptive parents. But also it becomes a mouthful to say, oh, this is my child's adoptive parents and this is my child's birth mom. And especially if you've got multiple adopted children in your home, you're like, oh, this person's birth mom and this child's birth mom. And I get it. It's not correct, but it is a mouthful. And like, it does become difficult.
Sarah, does that phrase have a charge for adoptees?
I agree with what Kelsey just said about the possessiveness. I think, you know, I think there's bigger battles to fight. So I guess, you know, and I was thinking about, I've seen and been the recipient of some heat over the choice of birth mom versus first mom. And at some point you have to kind of say, we have to all choose the wording that fits us and our situation. You know, I think, you know, and some people want to just have birth moms referred to as moms. And I get that too. I see it. I see all the reasons. I see the points. And with, you know, language, I see the reasons that you would take a shortcut to our birth mom. I think just being mindful and knowing about the possessiveness is the main key. And then, you know, giving each other some grace. I mean, we're not going to get it right all the time. The ones that are really damaging, do not use, but that, you know, and if you're doing it here and there as a shortcut, fine, you know, but just thinking about, you know, being mindful and thinking about what's the meaning and what's going on. Why am I using that? Is it simply a shortcut or is there more, is it a possessiveness? Is it a hierarchy? I'm better than the birth mom. Then I think that's important to examine and scrutinize and, ask some bigger questions, but that one is not as problematic for me. For, you know, again, we're not all the same. So I know someone watching this might have a totally different reaction to some of these words we're talking about.
Yeah, none of us are a monolith, right?
Yeah, we say it every time.
I do remember a few years ago, Adoptive Families Magazine made the editorial decision to take birth mom as one word and make it into two words. And one of the reasons they did that is because I am not an adoptive mom. I'm an adoptive mom. And so just to put that on parity there, and that, you know, there's a lot, mom is its own word.
That kind of makes me think of Birth Mother's Day. I really don't. And I just feel like it's such an othering, you know, like, because I feel like every Mother's Day I see these people say like, and okay, so if you go to church, which I don't anymore, but when I did and I would go to church and they'd say, Happy Mother's Day to all the stepmoms and the grandmothers and the mothers and the adoptive mothers. And I'm like, you have a lot of fingers to be counting on. And I'm like, but you didn't save one for me. And that's really interesting. And I just don't get why. Even like, there's all kinds of moms that are recognized, and they'll even say Happy Mother's Day to the moms who aren't moms yet who want to be. I'm like, okay, then say it to me too. You know what I mean? And it's like, it's just interesting to me that it must be such a point of, I don't know. Like, is it, what is it? Lori, you might know. What is it? Why can't we be included on that day? I just don't get it. That's something that's always really bothered me. And they're like, you know what? You deserve a day, but not ours.
I'm guessing.
You know, the day before.
Yeah. I'm guessing it's more of an oversight than an exclusion, just because,
okay.
But I don't know. And I'm also wondering if we looked into the history of Birth Mother's Day, I wonder if it was set up by a birth mother group. And so I'm thinking that the No.
I think I know the history, but I would have to look it up. We may have to put that in the show notes because I remember someone putting out that it was about that someone did set this up, but I don't remember who it was exactly.
I think there may be a fine line between honoring and othering because it may have been set up with the intention of honoring, but it doesn't always feel that way.
And
in other places too.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And you know, I think it's also easy to take offense to every little thing like that. And it's not something I take offense to, but it is something I don't choose to celebrate. Like I just don't. I feel like I've done enough to be honored on Mother's Day. And I've always felt that way. I don't know. I just think it's another way to other. And I feel like if now, even with the history, considering now in this present day, knowing what we know, knowing that birth mothers can have a voice and speak up about, you know, what they prefer too, like there's no reason we can't just embrace them on that same Sunday that we embrace everybody else. But you know,
that would be the ideal.
Because it is a very isolating day, especially if you don't have, you know, other children. It's a very lonely, quiet day, and it is sad. I remember being pregnant, and my child was born in May, a week after Mother's Day, and I remember crying to my mom. Being like, I just don't want to deliver on Mother's Day. I don't want to deliver on Mother's Day. Little did I know, I would deliver a week later, and that whole week of my life would be a chaotic mess every year. It's hard. It's a hard day.
It's interesting. I had a birth mom tell me about birth Mother's Day. I only learned about it a couple of years ago, and she liked it. She thought it was amazing. And I was excited at first. And then I could sense when I told my birth mother, happy birth Mother's Day, which, you know, I don't know if she knew there was, it didn't feel like it landed well. So I think you're right. I think it just separates birth mothers. And I don't know, I feel like we could do a whole like we could go on a whole other switch the gears and talk about Mother's Day in general, because it's so complex. And maybe we should do that because there's so much to unpack there for adoptees and the complications and how to honor both. But I find Mother's Day lonely too. And it may be because I do feel that divide as an adoptee having two mothers. My own mother never really liked Mother's Day. She was like, it's just a Hallmark holiday. And then I feel a lot of pressure internally that I put, not even meaning to, but on my family, that Mother's Day has to be amazing. And then it never is what I have built up in my head. And I'm lonely. I'm disappointed. And it's not fair. I don't even like the setup of that. I don't know. And I think you're right, Lori. I think it does. All of these probably do start with, let's honor, start with good intentions. Let's honor people, but it just maybe it's just when we try to force things too much, that's when it, and same with language, like when we try to force language too much, it just has kind of a, it doesn't always land.
I think for each of these terms we've been talking about, there's the sending end and the intention behind it is so important, but then there's also the receiving end and where the person is on their journey of healing and reconciling everything that brought them to adoption, I think affects that receiving end. And so that's why this is so complex. You can't say that this term is always good or this term is always bad because of the sending and the receiving end and all that complexity. Adoption is complex.
Well, and I think that it's just a sign that you can't simplify the complexity of these relationships, and they can't be always summed up in a term. You have to be, you have to approach these relationships with intention and with the knowledge that this is complicated. It's hard. It's messy. And but you still have to love them anyways, and coexist as well. And so the relationships for me are always going to be, they're always going to have way more weight than whatever we call each other. Unless, of course, those terms are like super disrespectful. That's different. But, you know, sometimes these terminology discussions, especially like in these online forums and stuff, they can just turn so nasty. And what I usually see happening is like people just aren't hearing each other. They're just not listening. So
that's why we're doing this, right? I mean, I think this is really, this is important that we talk it through together and hear from each other and keep it, it's going to continue to evolve, as you mentioned, Kelsey, and it does, that's on an individual level, and that's on a adoption level, you know, for all of us, where we're at emotionally and where we're at as we all look at adoption on in a deeper and more real way by having these conversations together. So I'm so grateful. I feel like we're wrapping up, but I also think we've left a couple, one thing on the table that I almost feel like we need to just circle back to, and that is adoption triad and adoption constellation. We started, I think I used constellation. I interchange them a lot. And right now there's three of us on the screen. Right now we're looking like a triad, but just in terms of constellation, should we, I wonder if we should touch on, you know, how we have evolved for the better in using constellation, because it does, the triad makes it look like it's just adoptive parent, birth parent, adoptee, and that's really adoption, but it affects a lot more numbers wise. The last number I've seen to concretize that is 100 million Americans are affected by adoption, but I think it's even more when you factor in, so siblings of adoptive children, siblings of birth parents, you've got the agencies, you've got lawyers, you've got who else? Help me, we've done a graphic before, we'll put that up actually. But there's just so many more people who play in, social workers, teachers, guidance counselors. There's so many more than we realize who are affected by adoption, that I think that number's got to be higher. And so I think that's where the distinguishing between triad and constellation comes into the language. So I just wanted to point that one out before we wrap up. Anything else? I mean, I feel like we did kind of bring it home already. So anything else to add, Kelsey or Lori? Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and subscribe to just be notified right away, and keep following along for our conversations. Drop comments. Let us know if there's anything else you'd like to see us discuss together. And thanks for watching.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Kelsey.